It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickert is off this week. Coming up on Central Time, the deadline for an agreement with Iran has passed, but negotiations apparently continue. We'll get the latest from Washington with Paul Singer of USA Today. First, Wisconsin's new DNA collection law goes into effect today. That means anyone arrested for a violent felony and anyone convicted of either a felony or misdemeanor will have to submit a DNA sample at the time of arrest. Wisconsin becomes the 29th state to adopt such a law, which the U.S. Supreme Court said was okay back in 2013, though for some, concerns still remain over rights being violated. Joining us now to talk more about this new law is Donald Downs. He's professor of political science, law, and journalism at UW-Madison. Donald, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, hi, Rob. How are you?
Good. So first off, how exactly does this law work?
Well, when a person is arrested for a violent felony, then they'll get a swab taken out of their cheek and then have their DNA tested to see if it's turned up in any other kinds of crimes. And the Supreme Court upheld that, as you mentioned, back in 2013. This goes a little further because it also allows people to have that done if they're convicted of a nonviolent felony, because the previous law the Supreme Court dealt with only concerned violent felonies. So now if you're convicted of a violent nonviolent felony or even a misdemeanor, that can be done. So it expands the scope of what the Supreme Court upheld back in 2013.
Now, the justification for this law, it isn't so much the case that you've been arrested for that's of interest here. It's to see if the person that's being arrested might be connected to another open case. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And, you know, there's always been an exception for searches into arrests. If you arrest somebody, going all the way back to for several decades now, Supreme Court's allowed the body of the person to be searched in the area of immediate control for either weapons or evidence. But usually that evidence pertains to the crime the person's arrested for. And this could be, you know, any kind of DNA that might have appeared on any kind of crime scene now involving even nonviolent felonies going, you know, years back, perhaps. So it's a broader kind of thing.
And so this DNA gets collected, I guess, classified. What happens to it? How is it kept on file? Do we know that?
Yeah, well, it's kept in crime labs and, you know, institutions related to the crime labs, and it's just sort of kept on hold. You know, they have ways of storing that. I don't exactly know how that's done, but it's linked to, you know, the way they preserve evidence from crime scenes all over the country. It's been going on for a long time. There's some concern that, you know, it could be tampered with. There has been some evidence in recent decades of technicians playing games with the evidence, and some innocent people have been convicted. So that's one of the concerns with it. The other is just that it's even more of a record keeping now of the state of your DNA heritage, which was a concern back in before the Supreme Court 2 years ago, but the court dismissed that.
Talking to Donald,
they dismissed it, but they said the benefits of this kind of process outweighed the invasion of privacy. That's probably a better way of putting it.
Talking to Donald Downs of the UW-Madison about the state's new DNA collection law that just went into effect today. Well, let's look at some of the arguments in that U.S. Supreme Court case. This is one that kind of split the usual partisan divide of the court. What were some of the concerns that the dissenting justices, the ones who didn't want this kind of collection, what case did they make?
Yeah, well, probably the main one was Justice Scalia. You know, it's sort of interesting. He's a conservative kind of guy, but when it comes to Fourth Amendment cases, he's often been on the more libertarian kind of side. He just said that this could open the door to DNA testing in all sorts of other contexts as well, because you're now taking this evidence with the suspicion that maybe someone might have committed some other kind of crime some other place. So he actually said in the decision, in his dissent, that, well, what's to prevent TSA from taking a swab of your cheek when you pass through the airport? Because, you know, maybe you committed some other crime someplace else. Now, you know, maybe that's a little hyperbolic. This could still be limited to those situations where there's an arrest or a conviction. But he was really concerned about the slippery slope aspect. And he put it kind of in the context of just, you know, the broader powers the state has attained over the years in law enforcement. And I know that people on both the left and the right are concerned about overcriminalization. And now this extends to misdemeanors, this law in Wisconsin. Interestingly, you know, the Koch Foundation, right, the very conservative foundation, is now working with the ACLU to deal with the question, the concerns about over-criminalization and too many people being in prison. So this sort of goes against the grain of those concerns.
And as I recall, Justice Scalia had a quote, something like, would the people who had the American Revolution have willingly submitted to the crown, probing their mouth?
Classic Scalia, you know.
Now, at the same time, Justice Kennedy, he was on the majority in this one. He says, no, this cheek swab, it's like, you know, we fingerprint you, we photograph you, we might use that fingerprint or photograph to connect you to other crimes. No different.
Yeah, and sort of, I think he said that the DNA swabs like this are the fingerprints of the 21st century. And, the court had there were two concerns about this. One is the physical intrusion of the search, right? Because it's technically it is a search. So the Fourth Amendment's in play here. They're touching your going inside your mouth and touching your inside of your cheek there. So, but it's a pretty minor one, and the court, at least in terms of the physical intrusion part. But that was the first concern, and that's a very traditional Fourth Amendment concern. The other concern was what's the record that is shown by DNA, and it gets into your genetic history. And that's a bit of a book about you. And it's not about what you've done. You know, it's not like going through your diaries or something like that. But it's still an extensive record. And no one's saying that the police shouldn't be able to do that. The question is whether or not they needed to have some sort of probable cause in order to do that. And so the probable cause to link this person to another kind of crime, maybe that would be, then you could get a warrant for that or get it, make sure a judge would authorize the sweep, the going into the cheek before the police did it. This is automatic. You know, once you're arrested, they can do it, period. And if you're convicted, they can do it, even though they may not have any cause whatsoever to believe you committed another crime, they can still do it.
And it seems
I think it's really three things. One, it's a minor physical intrusion. Two, it's the extensive record that's in the DNA, which is sort of a bit of a book about you. And then third, it just gives, the police broader search powers to go after crimes or misdemeanors that they may not have any cause to believe you committed at all, which is a Fourth Amendment issue.
And it seems like one of the lines that is crossed here that has some people worried is, okay, if you're convicted, we get it. You're giving up some of your rights. You might be incarcerated, can't vote, that sort of thing. If you're arrested, you might still be innocent. And so this is too intrusive on someone who might still be innocent of this crime.
Well, true. But that's going to be true for any traditional search incident to arrest. You know, supposing that you're arrested for, they have probable cause to believe that you committed shoplifting. And then they stop you, they arrest you, they have a right to search you. Well, what if they find marijuana in your pocket that they had no reason to believe that was there ahead of time? So the concern you raise is always going to accompany a search incident to arrest. But what this does is it just expands that, okay, beyond where it was, because now they can trace any kind of thing, any kind of DNA, footprint you may have left anywhere else around the country or anywhere within the United States.
Well, you know, when we look at this, there have been cases about how much of your cell phone can police search when you're arrested while you're carrying a smartphone. There's a lot of ways in which our technology is getting out ahead of our legal system, it seems like.
That's been an issue for a long time. I mean, a lot of interesting cases. You know, they had the GPS case back in 3 or 4 years ago. Back in 2001, they had infrared testing outside of a house. I forget exactly the technical term for that, but where the police would have these technology to catch heat waves coming out of the house. And Scalia actually wrote an opinion, that 5-4 decision, said they need a warrant before they can do that, even though they're outside of your house. So, yeah, I mean, the court's always having to keep up on the technological aspects here. No question.
Donald, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
That's Donald Downs. He's professor of political science, law, and journalism at UW-Madison.